From the K-Rob Collection, this is Audio Antiques, featuring programs from the golden age of American radio. I'm Ken Robinson. We're going to learn about Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. He was the first African-American to be elected to Congress from New York, as well as the first from any state in the northeastern U.S. Powell represented the Harlem neighborhood of New York City in the House of Representatives from 1945 to 1971. He served as a national spokesman on civil rights and social issues. Powell also urged the U.S. to support emerging nations in Africa and Asia. We'll hear the story of his life in a 1949 episode of Destination Freedom, plus Adam Clayton Powell in his own words in a 1961 edition of Meet the Press on NBC Radio.
Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Into 81 sessions of the United States Congress, which provide the legislative direction for the land we live in, there have come some of America's outstanding followers of our democratic heritage. They've come from every state in the Union and from many different circumstances, some by routes that were direct and unopposed, others by routes that were closed and took pioneering struggle to negotiate. The story of one congressman who came by the latter route, Destination Freedom tells today in a chapter entitled Father to Son.
My name, Powell, A. Clayton. Ordinarily, you'd call me Reverend Powell because until a few years ago, I was skipper of one of the largest Protestant churches in the country. I'm here to tell you about the man who they call Reverend Powell now, and who calls me Dad.
Hello, Dad. Sorry I haven't got time to talk about the church now, but I got to pack.
And who came home one cold afternoon in February of 1940 and went about packing his bags, getting ready to travel down a route I'd once started on. But I was never to get as far as the young man who called me...
Dad.
Yes, Adam?
About this idea of running for Congress.
Well?
The committee down at the church hinted that my father was one of those behind it. How about that?
I won't deny it.
Why?
You've wanted it for a long time, Adam.
How did you know? I never said
it. You never said anything about it. But you haven't been A. Clayton Powell's son for 30 years without letting me know something about the way you think. You're worried about it?
Very much. I'm not sure, Dad. I'm not sure why I've got the urge to get into Congress. I'm not sure it's in keeping
with the church principles.
It's been on my mind that way.
I know it has.
Is that all you can say?
No. No, I'll say more when the time comes. You are going to visit the Senate now, I understand.
Well, a committee from the church wants me to go down to the Senate to testify for the anti-poll tax bill.
I see.
They've been trying to pass that bill against collecting poll tax, well, ever since...
Ever since I left the South.
Yeah. The committee found a lot of facts about poll tax. This notebook full.
Well,
shows how few people vote and how much it costs and how easy it is to stay in office when you...
I've seen them, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd know all about it. It's these senators down in Washington who don't know. Well, they're going to get the surprise of their lives this session.
You think so?
All they need, Dad, is for someone to show them the facts. We've got the facts here. They don't need a minister in Congress as long as they let us in and listen to our testimony.
No?
That's why I wonder if this idea of me getting out and running for Congress is necessary. A minister's place is in the pulpit. Well, if I'm going to catch that 4:40 train, I'd better be going.
Yeah, I guess you'd better.
Well, what's the matter? You don't like the idea of my going?
It's a good idea.
You look disappointed.
Go and catch a train and explain to the Senate committee why the poll tax has to go.
Sure, Dad. I'll be back in a week.
And, Adam.
Uh-huh?
Don't be too disappointed, son, if they find a young Negro minister too troublesome to listen to.
I'll tell you all about it when I get back.
I heard about it before he got back. He walked out with his facts and his figures, his data and his charts that told the story about poll taxes and the disenfranchisement of 5 million voters. He, a New York-bred minister who had only the stories and cold figures to guide him. I had the living memories. That day, he was just another minister's son among many sons who came to testify before a Senate committee. But what happened to him would have only happened to one minister's son, my son. It happened when he went to the committee hearing. He was walking towards the chambers when a guard stopped him.
Say, where do you think you're going?
I'm supposed to testify on the anti-poll tax bill.
Got a pass?
Oh, here. Here, will this do?
Well, I suppose so. Right through that door there.
Thank you.
And I'll tell you, good people, if this subversive bill to eliminate the payment of poll taxes...
He went inside the crowded committee rooms and took a seat in the back and looked around in the glaring light of the bored faces. He brought out the papers from his briefcase and noticed how they contradicted the words of the speakers who held the floor from the beginning of the meeting until very late in the afternoon. When he rose from his seat and raised his hand, and when no one noticed, he spoke.
Mr. Speaker, may I have the floor for a minute? Mr. Speaker, I don't know the rules of the committee, but I'd like to break in if I may.
State your name and business.
A. Clayton Powell, Jr. I'm a Baptist minister. I'd like to speak on the poll tax question.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't finished.
Will you yield a minute to this gentleman from New York?
What has he got to say that I haven't already covered?
You haven't covered the fact that poll taxes, according to every authority that has investigated them, take the vote away from more white citizens in your state than Negro citizens.
I know my own state.
I know my figures. You haven't covered the fact that in your poll tax state, 2% of the electorate can send a man to Congress. In most states, it takes at least 60% of the voters.
Mr. Chairman, this Negro's out of order. I've got the floor.
That's the trouble. It's time someone took the floor who can refute the lies you're telling about the poll tax.
Order, please.
Mr. Chairman. This boy's out of order, and I demand he be expelled from the room.
Well, Senator, if you say so...
I do say so. Guard! Guard!
Wait! Listen to me. My church sent me here to present some facts. Let me read them to you.
We're not interested in your facts when you refuse to observe the rules of this committee.
But you're using the rules deliberately to keep me from being heard. I demand...
You demand nothing in this committee. Guard!
No, wait!
Yes, sir.
Get this scallywag out and escort him through the street.
All right, come on, you. Come on.
Wait a minute. You haven't heard me. Mr. Chairman.
Come on, guys. Take him out.
No, wait. I've got a right to be heard.
Now, come on. Don't make trouble. Come on. Now, beat it.
Please, don't push me. Let me back in.
Oh, no, you don't. Now, get up and get out of here. The idea of coming here disturbing the committee. Get up. Get going.
He got up. He gathered together his facts and his figures scattered over the whole floor. Data no one had asked for, no one cared to listen to. And he came home again, and I heard him very quietly open the door. Very quietly walk past my study. Son?
Yes, Dad?
I read about what happened.
Where?
It was in the papers.
Dad?
You didn't get very far, did you? You know this idea of mine about you running for Congress? What do you think of it now?
It's nonsense. They don't need a minister in Congress.
They need anyone who will stand by the truth.
I know. You once wanted to be a congressman. That was good. I'm not made for it. I could tell by what happened in the committee.
Was that a test?
For me, it was. I fought with all I had. It wasn't enough.
You had more than enough, son. You didn't draw up on it.
What are you talking about, Dad?
You took up the ministry because you believed you could do the most good that way, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And I'm afraid that in the years you've taken my place in the pulpit, you've forgotten how long it took to build our church. You remember your grandfather, son?
Yes. Yes, from a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. A good while before we ever heard of New York or ever dreamed that my son and I would live to be wealthy and respected. Going out to help other people instead of looking for help.
What about Grandfather?
Do you remember how you used to run your hands along his back and feel the scars, and he'd say,
It's the initial P on my back, Adam. That's it. One straight line and a loop. I reckon P is going to be the first letter in the alphabet you learn. Stands for Powell. Huh? How'd I get it? It was burned there, son, by an overseer to remind me that I was born a slave.
You remember, grandfather, son?
I remember now.
You never knew what it meant to have been born in those early days after the Civil War. It meant being born with the past of slavery still hanging vivid in the minds of everyone around us. It was then the initial P in my father's back burned him more than ever, and he decided to wipe the memory of it from his mind and from his children's mind. One day, 10 years after the war had been won...
Come on around here, you kids. Gather around me.
Yes, Pappy.
And now, some of you are too young to understand what I'm going to say, but never mind, you'll understand it later. The old master's come here to make us a proposition. He proposes that we stay on the land where I was once a slave. Now, wait a minute. Not going to be like it was the days after the war. He proposes that we stay on the land and plow it and raise crops. One third of the harvest will go to him for rent. The rest, I keeps. The only proposition we got to go on. If you think you can get enough out of the land, we try it.
We tried it. We Powells became the first of 100,000 sharecroppers in the South. We initiated the system. We were the first to try it and the first to discover...
No matter how many of the kids I keeps in the field, no matter how many acres I plows up, when it's dividing time, we're still behind. Adam, come here. You're young, but you're strong, and you seem to have a bright head on you. Now, some Yankees opening up a school for farm boys when you finished your part of the plowing. Run up the hill to that school, get as much as you can in an hour, and then run back down before nightfall.
I ran up the hill and met the strange Yankee that had come to teach sharecroppers the ABCs. He had an old Webster's blueback spelling book. And when I had learned this, he brought me my first real book.
Here. Now, I don't have any geography or fancy English books for you to be reading out of. Just as well. Only thing you can practice on is the Almighty's book. Take it. Start from Genesis, go through to Revelations. If you can learn to read the Almighty's book, you can learn to read anything.
I learned to read the Almighty's book. I read it to the sharecroppers in the evening when we gathered around the one-room house that was the home of the Powells. I read it until I knew the verses by heart, and families for miles around would come by the Powell farm and call Father.
Whoa! Whoa, 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 whoa.
Say, Clayton! Who? Clayton Powell!
Yeah? Mr. Jenner. What is it now, Jenner?
The same thing I asked about last Sunday. How about sending that Bible-reading youngster over to the house?
Adam's the Bible-reading one of the family, but he's also the workingest one. I can't keep loaning him out like this.
Not even if it spreads the word of the Almighty?
It's all right to spread the Almighty's words, but how'll I get my cotton spread is the question. I need him.
The Lord needs him.
I ain't aiming to deny the Lord, Mr. Jenner, but unless we get the crops...
I know. Every farmer in Franklin County's been borrowing the Bible-reading ability of your son, Adam.
Yeah?
Taking him away from his family duties. It's worth something to you. I'll pay you for it.
Well, Mr. Jenner, I didn't mean
it. How much is a sermon from him worth?
Well, now, I wouldn't think of charging for something like a little reading of the Bible. I wouldn't think
Would
of
a quarter for the day do?
Well...
30 cents?
Now...
30 cents and not a penny more.
Only for you, Mr. Jenner. Oh, Adam... Put down the hoe and pick up the book.
And whenever he'd call, I'd put down the hoe and go with the farmers and read the great words to them. And as I grew older, the more their inner meaning revealed themselves to me.
and the more the poverty around me seemed unnecessary, the more racial segregation seemed intolerable. And secretly, I groped for a way to become one of the lawmakers of the county and to put the meaning of the gospel into the government. I read every scrap of paper that came to the farm that told of a different life outside the county, that told of the new reorganization of the state and of the new men in office who, though unseen, were directing the fate of farmers and tenants around Virginia. And I longed to take my gospel among them. But one day my father said,
Adam, come here, boy. Adam, we got an offer that'll allow us to live easier. One of the old masters is now beginning to pay better wages, John Tompkins. I'm to take charge of the stable, Mother's to take charge of the kitchen, and you, Adam, you'll handle the Tompkins cows. All told, we should bring in $100 a year. That way, maybe we'll be able to escape sharecropping. Now, you do the best you can with your education, Adam. I don't want you to give up the books. I want you to keep on with the books.
He wanted me to keep on and become a minister. And I wanted to go in the direction of the state legislature and see if I could find another way out of the poverty around us. Then, one year, when the farmers of the county gathered to send a representative to the legislature, Jinter stopped by our fields and called to the old man.
Oh, Clayton!
What is this time, Jinter? If you want the boy to preach again, he's already been asked for.
The kind of preaching I got in mind, nobody's asked him.
Speak plain.
There's voting going on for new state representatives. We hear every county's picking its men.
You come to bother me about that.
Now, wait now, Clayton. There's something in this voting, even though it has passed folks by in this county for 20 years. Some of the boys been thinking that the way to get relief from the condition around here is to send an honest man upstate to talk to the governor.
Yeah?
Shucks, they've already passed too many laws we don't get to hear about in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, I know.
Well, if we had a man up there...
Yeah, that's right. I'll get together with you.
We're ahead of you, Clayton. We've gotten together.
You could have called a neighbor, you.
We're going to call your boy, young Adam.
For what?
Well, he's old enough to run for the state senate, and besides...
He don't know a thing about law.
He knows about the higher law. People around here trust him.
Yeah.
He reads the words as though they're branded on his soul, the way the slave brand's on your back.
Yeah, he does that.
He'd make a right good representative for the sharecroppers in this state. If he's willing to run, we'll elect him sure as you're born. He'll run.
I did run. I ran not knowing that the sturdy laws of the Reconstruction era had been uprooted in the rush of the planters for a return to their old power. I ran not knowing that new changes had taken place. Changes that a student of the Golden Rule had no way of knowing.
Hey, look at this! Young Carl's won! Hey, men, come here! Our candidate's in! We've got him in!
They had gotten me in. I had polled more votes than the other candidates together. I was going to the state legislature.
You're young, but you've been brought up to respect his law. Armed with his law, you can't fail. Get relief for the sharecroppers. Get some loans for us to buy land the way it was promised after the war.
Now you're overloading the boy, Jenner. Let him just get inside the legislature. I think he'd be doing all right if he could just make that step first.
I went out to make that step first. I went with my gospel and my homespun pants and shoes made from the hide of an old ox that had died the week before. And I made my way to the state capitol and into the room set aside for the new legislatures.
All right, gentlemen, step up and get your credentials. Step up when your name's called. Frazier, of Okaloosa County. Show your identification, take these credentials, go to the next room and register with the clerk. Hamlet?
Yes, sir.
Hamlet of Center County?
Yes, sir.
Follow Mr. Frazier right through that door. Well, now, boys, I guess that's all the new legislators we got for this session. All recorded?
All except me, sir.
You? Who the devil are you?
I'm Adam Powell, sir, from Franklin County.
Oh, you're that Negro that expected to slip through the vote laws.
What are you talking about?
The poll tax, that's what.
I don't know about that, but I know I'm the representative of...
Our sharecroppers who didn't pay a penny of tax. Tax law went into effect 4 months before the voting began. You backwoods boys ought to know that.
The only decent way of screening the trash from the citizens.
Oh, citizens, send me here.
We're sending you back. Your vote's been disqualified. Pete, see him to the door.
But listen, you can't do that. They spent everything they had in the campaign to send me here. Nobody tried to collect any poll tax.
Knew better to try to squeeze water out of stone broke sharecropper. Now, Pete.
Come on. Come on, you.
No,
hey,
no.
Rocky, help me. This guy's giving me trouble.
Okay.
Let's go.
Hold his legs, Rocky.
Yeah, okay.
All right, now I've got his hands. Open the door. A one, a two, a four.
That's nice. Flat on his back.
Here, you forgot something. Your book. Here, take it back where it belongs.
I picked myself up. I looked bewildered at the faces around me jeering, leering, and the pistols drawn. And I realized that before I could reach these keepers of the keys of the state with my Bible, I would have to reach them in a way that would force them to listen to me and those I represented. I didn't know how. I picked up my Bible and went home.
What happened, young'un? Come on, tell us what happened. Why doesn't he answer, Clayton? Make your boy talk.
I done what I could. He come home and said they wouldn't take him, that's all.
It's those taxes they told him about. Is that it, young'un?
Part of it.
The other part?
He stops there. Now, you men may as well go home. The boy's not well. I told you I thought we'd send him to the legislature too early. Go on home, leave him to me. In the morning, he'll feel better. He'll have a lot to talk about.
But in the morning, I had nothing I could talk about with the man I'd grown up with. How could I tell them that I had not come to believe they needed another power, not in the book, but to bring about the freedom they needed? I had put down the book. I turned from it and towards a world I'd never known, son. I became a vagrant. And I drifted to the state, always looking, searching for a strong wind to blow me into port. I became a gambler and lawbreaker, and I lived in order to forget the feeling of impotence and hopelessness I'd felt the day I lay on my back in front of the state legislature without the power to make men feel or understand. I was that way when I worked in an Ohio coal mine and dug coal beside a wandering minister whom the men called Moses, and whom I chided as we worked side by side.
Say, preacher, what do you got on your agenda for tonight when you get out of this here coal patch?
There's work of a different sort to handle, son.
Don't you ever get tired of throwing that stuff around? You know, when I was a kid...
You still are.
I mean, when I was green and gullible. I used to know the book better than anyone in my county.
I've heard... I want you to come out to my place tonight. I'd like to talk with you.
With me?
Yes.
Hey, you hear that, Steve?
Yeah.
Look, Moses, I've converted more sinners in an hour than you can in a year. Especially if you work on guys like me.
Hey, what was that?
It came from the forward tunnel. Sounds like maybe...
Coal gas exploded! Coal gas!
All right, now, men, now we've got to get out of this tunnel, or we'll crush each other if we don't do it orderly. Now, men...
No, nothing. Get out of my way. Get out of my way. Come on, you guys. Come on.
Some men went wild and panicked, pushed them over each other, and allowed some to follow off down the tunnel and get caught in a cross-explosion from the forward shaft. And we pushed up barricades to keep the gas from seeping through, and the minister spoke up.
The gas will cut through this barrier in 10 minutes. Men, the only way out of here is through this wall about here. Here's where the escape line comes down. I've studied the mine. I've studied every passageway in it. Now, who'll help me cut through?
I'll help you.
All right. How about you, Steve? Come on.
Somehow they believed him. Somehow we raised our picks and struck through the wall while the minister worked and sang under his breath. And it was that way we came out of the mine, through the right shaft and up again into the clear, evening air. It was then that I took a path I've never moved from since.
This way, Paul.
I was walking the minister's way home in the rain. I said,
I'm sorry for riding you, brother.
I understand.
I don't understand why I kept hounding you, or why the men kept behind you and gambled on you.
I suppose it's because they believe in me.
They don't go for that religious talk.
They go for any talk that'll spare their lives and give them something to live for. They know I want to live myself. They know I wouldn't gamble my own life off. It's why I'm a minister. And you could be, too.
I've tried.
You could try it again, and you still have time. What? To give some leadership to those who follow you. Ah, I've watched you, Powell.
Yeah.
You want to show people how to live on Earth, not in the hereafter. Well, that's good. If you can make your life an example, others will follow. I can prove that.
You've already proved it.
Then come inside my church. Come in out of the rain.
And I went inside and out of the rain, son. I went ahead and helped build the church I left for you to lead. This Abyssinian Baptist Church. One of the largest Protestant churches in America. I wanted you to interpret it. And if I have made my life an example to follow, do so.
Is that all, Dad?
For tonight. Will you think about it?
I will.
And this boy for whom I had built the church, looked back into the corners of my life and found that he had more steps to climb, and that these steps were not all in the pulpit, but towards Congress. He looked over the nation and saw that same poll tax which had disenfranchised his father and the fathers and mothers of millions was still imposed. He looked inside Congress for representation of the 15 million Negro Americans, and he found but one Negro congressman in its halls. And he took up where I had left off and went on to keep his appointment with Congress. And when he had been elected and was called to make his maiden speech, he remembered his example.
Chair recognizes the congressman from New York, Adam Clayton Powell, Jr.
Mr. Speaker, the representative who spoke before me asked why all the fuss about a minister coming from the pulpit into the halls of Congress. I came here because I remembered as a child seeing burned on the brown back of my grandfather the letter P. It stood for slavery. That seared my memory. And I have resolved never to rest until I wipe the meaning of it from my mind and the traces of it from this land we live in. Those traces still live in the form of poll taxes, lynching, unfair employment practices. Today, here in Congress, my first day, I rededicate myself to erasing those traces, to putting the principles of democracy into practice, and bringing about full citizenship rights for the Negro people and all other Americans, not at some vaguely promised date in the future, but now, right now, in this immediate future. On this we will not compromise. On this we will not be neutral. And we will not mark time. This, I answer the representative, is why another minister has entered the halls of Congress.
Yes. That was his first speech. It was not his last. He went in to set an example. He's waiting for others to follow.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of the A. Clayton Powells, father and son, prominent ministers and political leaders of New York. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of A. Clayton Powell, Sr. was played by Dean Almquist, and that of his son by Oscar Brown, Jr. Others were Stan Gordon, Ted Liss, Sid McCoy, Fred Pinkard, and Jess Pugh. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Sound effects were by Cliff Mueller and Dave Squires, and the control operator was Gary DeVlieg. This is Hugh Downs inviting you to be with us again next week when we will tell the story of folk artist Albert Ammons. You're tuned for The Stars on NBC.
Now, coming up on Monitor, Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference are Ted Poston of the New York Post, Merrill Muller of NBC News, Meg Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, and Mr. Spivak. They will talk with Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, Jr., the new chairman of the important House Committee on Education and Labor. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
President Kennedy will send to Congress this week his program of federal aid to education. Last week, he submitted his recommendations for raising the minimum wage. Both of these much-debated measures will be considered by the House Committee on Education and Labor. The newly elected chairman of that committee is Representative Adam Clayton Powell of New York, who is our guest today. In his 16 years in Congress, Mr. Powell has earned a reputation as one of its most controversial members. He has been in the forefront of the battle against racial discrimination. He is a Democrat, but he has not always followed party lines. He supported President Eisenhower in 1956, President Kennedy in 1960. Mr. Powell has been a lecturer, teacher, and editor. Since 1937, he has been the minister of the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem. Now we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Congressman Powell, in July of last year, after President Kennedy was nominated, you threatened not to stump for the Democratic ticket, and you were quoted as saying that the degree of my participation and enthusiasm would depend upon Senator Kennedy's personal pledges on civil rights. Would you tell us whether you received any personal pledges from President Kennedy?
I didn't receive any personal pledges, but I did have conversations with him, and I think the events of the past few weeks have borne out that he was the right man, especially in view of the fact that he has thrown the massive power of the executive head of our government behind the United States Supreme Court decision, something that had not been done in previous administration.
Thrown it behind the Supreme Court decision in what way?
In that he believed that it was morally and legally correct in his statement last week, and he would use his powers to see that it was enforced.
Have you had any indication of what powers he plans to use to see that the decision is enforced?
No, we've discussed that, and I know that he intends to order every agency of the executive branch to see that they fall in line with this new climate of democracy that the Supreme Court has created. But what his specific proposals are and what his timetable may be, I do not know.
Mr. Powell, if you were President of the United States, what specific steps would you take to enforce the Supreme Court decision?
I would use the method that I have been using in the legislative branch, the method of withholding funds from those states or subdivisions that are in defiance of federal law.
You're talking now about federal funds for housing and federal funds for education?
That's correct. The so-called Powell Amendment, which has been passed by the House every year since the Supreme Court decision.
Are you going to put up a fight in the early days again for the Powell Amendment?
I cannot retreat from it. I surely will, especially in view of the fact that President Eisenhower's Civil Rights Commission, composed of three Southerners, has endorsed the Powell Amendment, and Attorney General Bill Rogers, after he left office, said it was correct.
Mr. Powell, it's pretty well agreed around Washington that any attempt to move civil rights early in this session might wreck President Kennedy's entire social and economic program. Do you go along with that?
No, I don't. I feel that when the occasion arises that I shall make my effort, and I believe that others will support me. And last year it was proven that the Powell Amendment can be passed, and federal aid to education with the Powell Amendment in it also was passed.
Now, when that federal aid to education bill comes before Congress, before the House, are you planning to put the Powell Amendment into it or try to put it in?
Unless I feel that the administration is using its executive powers, which I've always felt that it did have, and I believe that maybe this new administration might indicate that it will use its executive powers and render the Powell Amendment unnecessary.
Mr. Poston.
Mr. Powell, there was some adverse criticism last week when two cabinet members of the new administration came to a testimonial dinner for you here. Most of his criticism centered around the fact that you had been in tax difficulties and are in tax difficulties with the federal government. I wonder what is the status of those difficulties now and whether you expect to go on trial again on those charges soon.
Well, I had no idea that this question would be raised, but I'm happy that you have, because it so happens that the federal attorney of the Southern District of New York, the attorney into which my trial was conducted, wrote a letter to the former Attorney General of the United States, William Rogers, asking him to dismiss my case. And that letter was buried. And that letter is now in the hands of the present Attorney General of the United States, Robert Kennedy.
Do you think we could confirm this through the present Attorney General?
I can't speak for him, but I'm sure that he would be willing to answer questions that are asked him. I haven't conferred with him at all.
Well, in view of that letter, would you expect to go on trial again?
Not if the previous federal attorney asked that the case be dismissed in view of the jury's vote of 10-2 for acquittal and the fact that Judge Frederick Van Pelt Bryan threw out two of the counts.
Mrs. Craig.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, you have said just now that you would not retreat from your battle to end segregation with federal funds in schools. Now, I'd like to examine a little more closely. At what point do you think the executive can ask? Would it be when the school district made its application for money that it would not be granted on a segregated basis?
That's correct. It's at that particular point that I've always introduced the Powell Amendment, Mrs. Craig. At that point in the bill where the state must have its plan approved by the Commissioner of Education.
What reassurance do you want on that before you either put the Powell Amendment in your committee or try to do it on the floor?
Well, first, I wouldn't put it in the committee. I've never done that because I believe it would only serve as an excuse for the Rules Committee to block the passage of the bill out into the general body. The only assurance that I would like is to just see what kind of climate is being created by the Kennedy administration in this field. And I think that the indications so far are that we are going to have a climate where the Powell Amendment might not be necessary.
Yes.
The appointments to office, his throwing of his weight behind the Supreme Court decision, new appointments which I know of that will be announced within the next few days that are going to be pioneer appointments. And I just think we have a new climate where the Powell Amendment will not be necessary. But nevertheless, I will not retreat from it if that climate does not come up to what
I expect. Mr. Chairman, I ascertained from the White House that they invited you to come down there to the White House for the talk that you had with the President 10 days or so ago. Did you talk about this specific issue of executive action?
No. The only time I've talked to President Kennedy concerning this was at Georgetown soon after the elections. I've discussed this with Secretary Ribicoff, and he said it would require a major decision, and he could not indicate his feelings until he talked to Mr. Kennedy. When I was at the White House last Thursday, a week ago, we talked about everything but the Powell Amendment.
Yes. Now, you did not offer your amendment to housing the last time, did you?
No, I offered it to the general bill.
Yes.
Housing, and it was defeated, and then the next day it was used by a Republican who voted against my amendment to try to kill slum clearance housing. And I led the forces against him the second day.
Do you think you can get that by executive action, too? No segregation in housing?
I think we can get anything by executive action. The president has the power to say how federal funds shall be spent.
Mr. Mueller.
Well, first, Mr. Chairman, on education, NBC News is told that the Kennedy bill, which is due Tuesday, I think you're going to present it, aren't you?
That's correct. It'll be given to me, but I will not retain it. I will give it to Congressman Frank Thompson of New Jersey. As the incoming chairman, I do not want to monopolize legislation. I want to see that all of the gentlemen and the gentlelady from Oregon, Mrs. Green, have pride of authorship. All I want is legislation without pride of authorship.
We are told that this bill has a state option plan in it, that a state can decide how to use the federal funds it gets for education. Is this correct?
Frankly, sir, that's been my proposal and was adopted by Mr. Ribicoff in conference with me in my committee room 3 days ago.
In fact,
I called it states' rights rather than states' option. I want to be clear about this.
Don't you feel this may open the door to more discrimination, the very thing you've been fighting with the Powell Amendment?
No, sir. Not if the executive action is utilized or if the Powell Amendment is adopted. The states' rights program merely says that we give to the states X million dollars, and the state can use that for construction of schools and or teachers' salaries. So the element of discrimination doesn't come in there at all. But what I'm trying to do is to push this idea forward that in order to get the South that needs education more than the North to vote with us on this bill, that they can have the right to use this money for either building or for teachers' salaries.
On the question of presidential powers, do you feel that Mr. Kennedy's moral and persuasive powers, which I believe is his quote, the powers he will use on civil rights, will be more effective than, say, Mr. Eisenhower's use of troops in Little Rock?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The very day that Mr. Eisenhower sent the troops to Little Rock, the New York Times quoted me in a sermon as saying that I was opposed to it. I don't believe that anything solved by violence will ever be permanently effective. I believe morality is the massive power that is enduring.
But during the Civil Rock crisis, you condemned a number of Democrats, members of your own party, for their attitude about Little Rock.
I don't recall that criticism.
You condemned Forbes and Fulbright and McClellan.
I guess you're right. They are members of my party, but I don't consider them as close to our view as other members.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Powell, have you been given any assurance by President Kennedy or anybody else that he will take steps against racial discrimination through executive order whenever possible and as soon as possible?
Well, I know that Mr. Kennedy repeatedly said publicly that he would end discrimination in public housing when he became president. And I noticed that...
By executive order?
By executive order, yes, sir. That's only way he could do it.
Yes. Now, do I understand that you're going to let a school bill go through that doesn't have the Powell Amendment, that you won't fight for the Powell Amendment in the school bill, and that if a housing bill comes up, you won't fight to include the Powell Amendment in the housing bill, and you will expect that the president himself will, by executive order, take care of the situation?
No, sir. I said that I would press for the Powell Amendment, that I would not retreat, but if the climate continued to increase, as it seems to be going now, more favorable for full democracy, then I might not need to introduce the Powell Amendment. But as it is now, I am intending to introduce the Powell Amendment.
I'm just wondering on the timing of the thing. What would the president have to do before you refused, before you let the Powell Amendment go by the board?
Well, I think any specific action or maybe conferences that can be held with Mr. Ribicoff and myself, I don't envision the House getting the school construction bill as early as I originally thought. I don't think we'll get the school construction bill until the Senate has finished, which may not be until after Easter. That'll be ample time for some indication, more than we have already received. And I want to applaud Mr. Kennedy for what has already happened in his magnificent appointments in various agencies of government. So I don't think that will come up for about until Easter.
You believe that you can pass a law without the Powell Amendment and that the president can, by executive order, do what the Powell Amendment does?
Oh, I know it. That's the law of the land.
On what basis? What do you mean you know it? How do you know that?
The law...
It hasn't been done up to now.
The law... Oh, yes. It was done by President Roosevelt with the Fair Employment Practices Order, Executive Order 8802. It was done by President Truman with the executive order abolishing segregation in the armed forces. It was done by President Eisenhower abolishing segregation in Veterans Administration, United States Navy shipbuilding yards, and by instructing the District of Columbia commissioners to quietly proceed to abolish it in our nation's capital.
But if Congress passes a federal aid to education bill giving aid to various states, you believe by executive order the president can constitutionally withhold that aid from the state if they practice discrimination?
I believe he's morally and legally bound to withhold federal funds from any political subdivision of this nation that is in defiance of federal law, whether it's Supreme Court decision, executive order, or legislative action.
And do you think that the conservatives and the conservative Southerners believing that are likely to vote for any bill?
Well, then we might as well adjourn Congress, because the legislation is ahead of us, there are lots of... And the South is the one who will benefit from this. They need public housing, and they need education, they need school construction, they need the medical program, which will also be introduced.
Well, if you
Tuesday.
Think you can get this bill through Congress without the Powell Amendment and the executive order of the president, why don't you clarify the whole issue by having it in the law and let the Congress vote on it so there'd be no question about it?
That's just what I have done.
I'm talking about what you're going to do.
I will proceed to do that if I feel that the executive branch is not going to do what I feel that it can.
Why don't you do it anyhow?
No.
Make sure.
I am interested in getting education voted on, passed by the United States Congress. And if I can do this without the... And if I can refrain from introducing the Powell Amendment, I know the possibilities are much better for permanent passage of this legislation.
Are you, Mr. Powell, trying to avoid a fight in the House of Representatives among Democratic Party members? Is that your purpose in proceeding in the manner in which you say you will?
My purpose as the chairman of the Committee on Education and Labor is to make up for about 10 years of lost time, and to see that this nation gets back on the in the mainstream of education and labor. And if I can do this by diplomacy and by getting votes from people who automatically would vote against it if they saw the Powell Amendment in it, without sacrifice of principle, with the knowledge that full democracy is going to be guaranteed, then I will do that, sir.
Mr. Poston.
Mr. Powell, there's a bitter fight going on here in New York for control of the Democratic Party. Have Carmen DeSapio on one side, Mayor Wagner, Senator Lehman, Mrs. Roosevelt on the other. Now, not only as a congressman, but as a district leader in Manhattan, you have a stake in this. How do you feel about Mayor Wagner's demand that Carmen DeSapio resign as chief of Tammany Hall?
Well, I don't believe that any one person should dictate to any other person what they should do, and it was on that basis that I gave Carmine DeSapio his first defeat in 1958 when he tried to purge me, and we beat the forces of Carmine. I believe that as long as the majority of the people of Tammany Hall elect Carmine DeSapio as leader, then we'll have to go along with that. However, for the good of the Democratic Party, I believe that there should be a rapid meeting of the minds, and there is going to be a series of conferences this week in Washington in which Mr. DeSapio and others will participate. And I believe that by the end of this week, we're going to have a formula which will be for the good of our party and for the good of democracy in our town.
Will you participate in the Washington conferences?
Yes, sir. I've already participated in several of them as the senior member of the New York City delegation of Democrats. I am the chairman of the New York County Democratic delegation to Congress.
Well, in your fight with Mr. DeSapio, you often referred to Harlem as Carmine's plantation.
Not used to.
Oh, you used to.
Yes.
You don't in the log of Victor.
That's right. No, this is emancipated. This is Lincoln's birthday, and Emancipation Proclamation has been written. No longer plantation up in Harlem.
But if a showdown came right now, who would you side with, the mayor or DiCiprio?
Well, that would depend on which one is going to have the cooperation of the president, offering the best opportunities for integration and advancement in the party in our town. Right now, my feeling is that I'm waiting for the best man, the better man, as they say at Harvard.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Chairman, in your New York speech after dinner, you said unemployment is our number one problem, and you blamed it largely on automation and on cheap labor imports. How can we maintain our high standard of living and high wages and compete with cheap labor imports?
Well, I am a free trade man, and I am an internationalist, but there are some areas of this country that are becoming bankrupt, depressed areas because of cheap imports. And my number one ranking member, the Honorable Cleveland Bailey of West Virginia, represents one of those areas. And something has got to be done, and for that reason, as soon as the elections were over, I appointed a task force headed by Congressman Holland of Pennsylvania, and with a group of researchers, he's been preparing legislation on this, and that legislation should be ready within the next 90 days. Something's got to be done. I don't believe in a blanket restriction of imports, but I believe that there should be opportunities to stop imports in certain areas that are bankrupting our country.
On the other hand, do you not regard automation as inevitable, and how do we prevent more idle hands if you have automation?
I believe that automation is going to be the boon rather than the bane of our economic system. And although I've been criticized for saying this, I will say it again. I believe we've got to meet automation with a 32-hour week. I can remember the screams that greeted the proposal for a 48-hour week and the one for a 40-hour week. Now I believe with automation we've got to have a 32-hour week.
Did you not know that Secretary Goldberg is against that now?
Yes, and also I know that President Kennedy is against it, too. But that doesn't mean that they're right nor I'm right.
Mr. Mueller.
In view of President Kennedy's remarks, pardon me, he wasn't present when he made the remark, his campaign statements about Jimmy Hoffa of the Teamsters Union, do you have any plans for your committee to investigate that union?
No. I don't believe that any one man should be singled out in labor or management to be pilloried by the committee that I have set up under Congressman Zelenko, which is the Committee on Irregularities. I believe that that's the job of the Department of Justice. If Jimmy Hoffa is the man that everyone says he is, then why isn't he in prison? And I am not a cop. And that's the job of the Department of Justice.
Under this new civil rights atmosphere that you predict and feel already in Washington, do you feel there's still a need for the separate Negro-American Labor Council?
I feel that there is just as much need for it as there is for the respected Jewish Labor Committee and the FL-CIO, and I'm sorry that it was born out of the womb of bitterness, which was generated by Mr. Meany's remark against Mr. Randolph. But it's born now. It's a fait accompli. The meeting in Washington this week, and I will address them on Friday night.
Mr. Spivak, we have about 2.5 minutes.
Mr. Powell, as you know, you've been criticized widely in the press for absenteeism during the many years you've been in Congress. Do you think there's any justification at all for that criticism?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Tremendous justification. But in the first place, I have received the highest rating and voting record by the FL-CIO and by the NAACP. But you must remember, Mr. Spivak, that for 10 years... the Honorable Graham Barden sat as chairman of this committee and ignored the most basic principles of democracy and passed me by, and I didn't have the slightest warmth to operate as a congressman. As soon as Mr. Barden Retired, I went to work, and I've been working nearly every day in Washington since Election Day. And I have moved to Washington nearly all of my life, and I intend to be there doing a full-time job 5 or 6 days a week from now on in.
I'd like to ask you a question on the education bill. I'm sure you're familiar with what the president is going to say on Tuesday and what's in that message. Are you in agreement with everything in those?
No, I am not. And I expressed this to Mr. Ribicoff in my committee rooms this past Thursday when we talked over the bill and its details. The president's bill is going to call for a massive scholarship program, free grants, especially in the field of medicine and the field of dentistry, and I don't believe that this country should give any more grants for scholarship. I believe they should be loans, repayable in a reasonable period of time after a person has graduated, so that we can have a revolving fund. It'll be easier on our budget and be more money available for our young people.
Is that your major difference?
That's our major difference, yes, sir.
Mrs. Craig?
Yes, I would. Sir, nearly all of your political life, you have devoted yourself as a congressman for one district, 90% Negro, to the cause of Negro freedom and civil rights. You cannot do that, can you, as chairman, when you must serve all people and all interests?
You're exactly correct, and that's why my schedule of operations has to be expanded, and the time that I give now must be in terms of the whole 50 states and our territories from Puerto Rico across to Guam and Okinawa.
That's a promise.
That's a promise.
I think on that promise I'll have to interrupt. I'm sorry, but I see that our time is up.
Our thanks to Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. and the members of the panel, Ted Poston of the New York Post, Merrill Muller of NBC News, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, and Mr. Lawrence Spivak. The guest on Meet the Press next week will be Abraham Ribicoff, the new Secretary of Health, Education and Welfare. Meet the Press, which is celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air, is produced by Lawrence Spivak.
If you're tired of outrageously expensive cell phone bills, come on over to Mint Mobile. Talk, text, and data plans just start at $15 a month. There are no contracts. Sign up and Mint will send you a SIM card. Just insert it into your phone. You can even keep your old number.
So don't make your cell phone provider rich. Keep that money in your wallet. Go to krobcollection.com for details on Mint Mobile. I hope you are enjoying Audio Antiques, our Golden Age radio podcast. If you are, why not subscribe and tell your friends? For more information about our shows and sponsors, check out krobcollection.com. Our music is by H-Beats. That's H-Beats with a Z. I'm Ken Robinson. Thanks so much for listening.